Chapter 7. The sun rose above the sunken swamp, hanging low in the skies. It sent gleaming shafts of light slashing down from the east to cut the dreams of the slumbering changeling to pieces, rousing her from her slumber. But no, that was not what happened at all. A sun, one of an uncountable infinitude scattered across the vastness of time and space, neither rose, fell, nor hung in the sky. Far above it, a world spun, bound together by gravity, charge, and the strange, terrible contortions of space-time that flicker within the smallest fragments of existence. Counterpoised ripples of electricity and magnetism, light to the inhabitants of the little world, propagated up from the star to refract, diffract, reflect, and be absorbed by the stuff of the planet's surface. Some, all, of these waves splashed against the closed eyelids of a sleeping creature, and vast universes of probability were forever sundered from one another as a tiny fraction of them resonated with certain minute fragments of matter within the sleeper's eyes, triggering a cascade of neurochemicals which... But again, no. The star, the spinning planet, the coiling waves of light were all true and correct. This swamp, into which reality pooled like water flowing into a vast stone basin, would not tolerate such foolishness as rising suns or shafts of light. The interloping changeling who slept beneath one of the countless shrub-like willows growing in that strangely real place, however, was not of the swamp. When she had entered it, she had carried a faint but persistent aura of fairy with her, and it persisted still, woven through her bones and flowing swift as summer lightning in her veins. As soon as the ripples of electricity and magnetism struck her eyes, the waves became simple sunbeams, wrenched loose from the cosmic varieties of twisted time and oscillating possibilities. And in the same instant, the sleeping she was made minutely more mundane, the magic within her diminishing as it spent itself against the impinging light, for every action. Bonbon's eyes flickered open, and after scratching absently with her hind leg at the bits of moss and twig clinging to her flanks, she rose to her hooves, balancing unsteadily on love-starved limbs. She turned and craned her neck back, gazing up at the stone colossus that was the Canterhorn. This close to its base, it dominated the skyline, its steep flanks arcing out to each side and ice-capped peaks soaring towards the zenith. It was an intimidating sight. Bonbon sighed. It was a shame that following the train line was no longer a practical option, as it would have been an easier voyage than the one that now confronted her. By the time Aldrovandra had caught up with her yesterday, though, she had made such good progress it had seemed that retracing her steps would have been a waste of time. And if she had been wrong, well, it was too late to bemoan the fact now. The changeling trotted down to a nearby pool, took a few gulps of water dank with the taste of rotting leaves, and after waiting for the surface to clear, peered into the water's depths trying to spot Aldrovandra. Yes, there she was, still as a toad in midwinter and half buried in the muck at the bottom of the pool. Bonbon glanced around, spotted a suitably hefty rock, and bucked it into the weed-choked mirror. There was a satisfying glunk, a sloshing and a shower of water, and after a short interval a bleary-eyed kelpie emerged. Aldrovandra directed an extremely peeved stare at Bonbon, and with an air of wounded dignity said, "Pfft." The changeling rolled her eyes. "Noted. Now cough the water out of your lungs, grab a fish or frog if you're hungry, and let's get going. We've got a swamp to cross and a mountain to climb." She turned, tried to ignore the hunger biting at her own bones, and forced her aching legs into motion. It was going to be a long day. Small fragments of light skittered through the tree-filled swamp, cast down from the waving leaves above and glowing rust-red as they sank into the leaf-stained water. Overhead, leafy canopies spread to stifle the wind and subdue the sun, while beneath, solitary ripples drifted through the dark waters, gliding lazily along on their silent business. Egrets lived here, stalking through the shallows and spearing at sticklebacks and frogs, while cowbirds and warblers dove and leapt through the gaps between the branches and swamp crayfish rested beneath the tattered rims of decaying leaves. Of she, though, there was not a sign. No golden-eyed, silver-tongued pukas, no bloody red manes, no will-o'-the-wisps, not even the smallest apluchara, curled salamander-like below the water and lying in wait to crawl down the throats of drowsy travelers. Even the more typical beasts were missing. None of the birds flittering through the trees overhead showed the steely flash of stymphalian feathers. The cooing of bog parasprites was conspicuous by its absence, and Bonbon would have been willing to bet that there wasn't a single hydra, even a juvenile, for miles around. For her part, Bonbon didn't mind so much. It was strange, yes, and buried deep in the back of her mind there was a little logical voice twitching anxiously and asking pointed questions about whether it might not be a good idea to just be a tad worried by this eldritch banality. But mostly she just felt a great overwhelming relief. She felt safe here. It reminded her, of many ways, of the feel of Ponyville or Canterlot, where all that was unseelie and fey lay buried beneath cobbles, plaster, and the happy chatter of ponies going about their good, simple little lives. except that here the threads of fairy weren't buried. They just didn't exist. It felt as though a great burden that had been pressing against her mind all her life had suddenly been drawn away, and despite her fear for Lyra, she found herself feeling almost cheerful. It was a nice swamp, she thought, as she gingerly gnawed at a leech that had attached itself to one of her fetlocks, trying to tug it off. It was, perhaps, a little too full of horrible sharp-toothed things with bad attitudes, leeches, snakes, midges, Aldevandra, ticks, but still, all in all, a very nice swamp. She approved of it. Horrible sharp-toothed thing number 4 on the other hoof was not taking things quite so well. As they traveled deeper into the swamp, Aldevandra had become less talkative, taking to crawling through the water close by Bon Bon's side with only her head held above the surface and her gaze darting suspiciously left and right. Every so often, she would hear something, or think that she had heard something, and there would be a small explosion of pond scum and distressed frogs as the kelpie tried to dive beneath the surface of the hawk-deep water, thrashing frantically against the shallow swamp bed. It was, Bon Bon had to admit to herself, more than a little pathetic, in the kinder, more sympathetic sense of the word. Which wasn't to say she was suddenly awash with feelings of goodwill and sympathy towards the creature. After being doused in greenish ooze for the 5th time in an hour, the changeling snapped, "Oh, for goodness sake, Aldevandra, there's nothing out here!" Aldevandra hissed. "I know, smelt you. That's it. That is exactly it. There is nothing there. How can you stand it?" Bon Bon shook herself, ridding her coat of some of the larger globs of ooze, and waded on in the direction of the distant canterhorn. Visible above the trees is a jagged pillar of shadow blotting out the afternoon sun. "Honestly, I sort of like it."
"You like it?" repeated Aldevandra in a flat, incredulous voice. "You like it?"
She cantered splashily after Bon Bon, her voice soaring up several registers to dance uncertainly between shrill and hysterical.
"Of course you like it! Really, I don't see why I should even be surprised. It's nothing so frightful after all, just the total absence of fairy."
Bon Bon shrugged. "It's not that bad. And besides, my voice hasn't been this steady in years. Normally it hops all over the place, but here there's not enough background magic to shift my form. It makes for a nice change."
"Oh, well, that makes it all better then, doesn't it? Who cares if we're flopping out here like a fish in the centered lands, as long as your smelted voice is steady? Let's just embrace this obscene openness, shall we? Tra-la, I seem to hear you say. Tra-la-la, and a few more tra-las for flavor. I'm a traitor to my race in the unseelie court itself, a filly fond of fillies, a changeling who plays with her food in the very vilest sense of the phrase, a she who not only tolerates but encourages the blasphemous fever dreams of a shellycoat. But what can I do that's really perverse? What further infamies can I indulge in?"
"Aldevandra?"
And then...
The kelpie's voice had completely abandoned the merely shrill at this point and was nearing nervous breakdown.
"Not content with following in your own unnatural tastes, you insist on dragging along a sane creature, a creature who once took forward to days of happily picking her fangs with her last meal's bones at the bottom of a bog, or lounging on a mossy boulder in the middle of a lovely downpour, or sneaking up on frogs and jumping on them to feel them squish so delightfully around her hooves. Happy, innocent creature she, little did she suspect."
"Aldevandra?"
"Little did she suspect, I say. Oh, fortune, like the moon you are variable, always waxing and—"
"Aldevandra!"
"Waning," finished the kelpie. "And your rude to boot. I'm not one to boast, but that was shaping up to be a truly phenomenal fit. What new outrage, pray tell, is the world's least unseelie she planning to perpetuate now?"
Bon Bon waded cautiously over to the shadow of a low-lying branch, trying futilely to disturb the water's surface as little as possible. "No new outrage at all. I just thought you might want to know that there's something strange coming. I can smell it. Try not to make any—" There was a tremendous splash as Aldevandra and an Aldevandra-shaped volume of water had a short but violent argument over the ownership of a patch of muck below the swamp's surface, which Aldevandra won decisively. Noise. White-green froth rocked back and forth on the disturbed water, and wavelets spread out in great concentric circles into the shadowed swamp beyond. A bittern boomed nervously somewhere overhead, then fell silent. The wind shifted direction, and the smell Bon Bon had detected, a bizarre scent, faint but extraordinarily complex and many-layered, began to fade as it was carried away again. The disturbed water smoothed, the ripples quieted themselves, and a tree frog clinging precariously to a low-hanging leaf began chirping. Bon Bon allowed her tense muscles to relax fractionally. There were many creatures she wasn't very familiar with in this swamp, and it wasn't so far-fetched that an otherwise unremarkable creature might possess a completely new scent. Perhaps she was being overcautious. Splunk. Something bulky and heavy had entered the water. Somewhere out there in the gloom, too big to be a frog, it sploosh, blunk, splunk. It was wading through the water towards them. To judge from the sounds, it was tall enough that it was completely clearing the water's surface with each step. Glunk, sploosh. Widening rings of ripples glided into view, curving around Aldrovandra's submerged body and breaking against Bon Bon's hocks as they flowed smoothly forward. Splunk. Bon Bon twitched involuntarily, head snapping up towards the sky as the light filtering down from above abruptly shifted. The shadows lengthened around her, streaming out towards the source of the sounds as if the sun had suddenly come unstuck from the sky and was slipping back down to the horizon. With a gentle hiss, mist began rising from the water around the frightened changeling, eddying up in diaphanous dunes and arabesques that hovered in the damp air before pouring in a silent flood along the same path as the light. The tree shadows angled themselves oddly, twisting like midnight black spotlights so that instead of lying parallel, they all bent towards the approaching thing, obscuring its shape in a many-angled shroud of darkness. And all this without the slightest prickling of magic or the faintest hint of the green, writhing fairy scent. Sploosh. Splunk. Bon Bon had just concluded that trying to escape would be suicide and was about to start galloping nonetheless. It was a miracle that Aldrovandra was staying as still as she was, though possibly the Kelpie had had a heart attack, when the shadowed, swaying immensity came to a halt perhaps 5 yards from the cowering she. Bon Bon risked peering around her tree trunk at the towering thing, but without much result. It was completely obscured in the mist and shadows, with the possible exception of a crowning mass of shadows and light that might have been branches, or maybe antlers. A small wave surged past her as the thing lowered itself down, reclining or sitting in the shallow water. "And wit," spoke a resonant, throaty, crackling voice from the depths of the mist. "Michtelin inside and a futha be thinkin' te have wandered too far to reach a tierna nog." Bon Bon didn't respond, and the shadowed beast gave a chuckle like the sound of pebbles and rocks tumbling down a scree slope just before an avalanche. "Swallow the fear and clings in your throat. I have no special love for the A's side, but neither have I hatred for them. I pity them only, and wish them a happier fate than the one that is their doom. You are no seen by a cruelleen." Bon Bon took a hesitant step from behind her hiding place. She felt a slight shift in the water to her left, which might have meant that Aldrovandra had moved as well. If so, though, the Kelpie evidently rethought her first impulse and remained below the surface. Not that Bon Bon blamed her, for once. The changeling mare took a deep breath and waded out into full view, fearful face upturned towards the veiled speaker. Yes, it definitely had some branching structure atop its head. Horns, it looked like now, only far more horns than any normal creature should possess. She couldn't see them clearly, but it looked as if none of them matched, each one coming from a different animal. For a moment, before the mist coiling around its body, his body, considering the antlers, thickened again, she thought she had even seen a monstrous antenna twitching in horrific immensity. What are you? The shadows shifted and great horns tilted as if a huge head was slowly being shaken side to side. Nay, let us know how the game is played. Thou hast not answered my question, wee laden side. Things must not be left undone. Ah, what was she doing here? The Kelpie in the swamp, the court's attack on Canterlot, her futile warning, Lyra, the interrupted train ride, the trek across the swamp. How to tell all that? I'm, a changeling, actually, and she's a Kelpie. I'm trying to get to Canterlot on hoof. The clan of the changelings is attacking it, and a pony friend of mine is in danger there. I need to... Miss swirled. Canterlot? Poor wee beastie. That is only a name, and names change. Thou art a changeling now, but once thy kind were Lina inside. See? Changes. Always changes. Dinna tell me the names. Tell me truths. Right then. Okay. I'm trying to get to the city on the side of that mountain there, the tallest one. The pony I mentioned is up there, in great danger, and I'm the only one who can help her. So, well, I had to come through here. And thy friend, the Fua, or Kelpie, as thou ken her. What is her reason for struggling so far? Acquaintance, corrected Bon Bon automatically. She's tagging along, for various reasons. A cagey answer, but mair good some might take been. The thing within the shadows shifted down in what might have been a bow. For a moment, Bon Bon caught a glimpse of a huge lanky arm held in front of the beast, patches of hair of varying lengths hanging off it and interrupted by shadowed scales, short fur and glistening frog-like skin. And then the mist returned. It vaguely reminded her of something she had seen once, but she wasn't sure what. An old painting, maybe? A carving? And now I shall answer thy own question, though it is an odd one, for I am as I am. Thou mayst already kin of my kind, though, as the Urisks? Bonbon stared blankly. The cluster of shadows made a nodding motion. The name is akin to thee, then. Well, it is an old name at that. I feared to hae no newer ones, perhaps another older name. When the sun was a wee and the moon head was no yet dizzy with envy, I walked abroad more often, and some, then, kin to me as the deuce. This name, perhaps? But I see it is a strange to thee. Ah, weel, he signed. Then, unless thou kenst the name Bugle Nawes, there be a mickle kindly ways that I may answer thy question.
I've never heard your name before, Bugle Nawes. Should there be an O in front of that name? O Bugle Nawes? Maybe Great Bugle Nawes should be more appropriate?
Somehow, the name all by itself seemed inadequate.
But couldn't you just, I don't know, describe what you are?
The creature repositioned himself slightly, sending another cluster of wavelets rippling out from his resting place in the water.
Though it is not of muckle concern to me, Bugle Nawes is not my name. I am the Bugle Nawes, the Night Shepherd, as you might say, and that is not a bad way to describe the manner of being what I am, though I will not say that is a good way either. But for me to tell thee well and truly would take 12 lives of your kind, I think, and perhaps 12 mare. You would have long since died of old age before I finished.
I am one of the she, actually, so I am immortal, Bonbon paused. At least I think so.
Thought so. Ah? The Bugle Nawes leaned forward, and for a moment the changeling thought she saw a faint shine of amber eyes within the mist, glimmering with antiquity. She had seen eyes like that before. She knew she had. They reminded her of something that she had tried hard to forget. The beast chuckled.
If it be so, then the world has changed in great and peculiar ways. They sighed were nae immortal when I last kent them. Indeed, there was scarcely any other beasties more mortal than they.
He chortled to himself again, a rolling, throaty sound, and Bonbon finally remembered where she had heard a voice like that before, and where she had seen a familiar patchwork body and scented that convoluted, confused scent. A year ago, during the second most horrible day of her life, a god had set itself loose in Equestria. It had smelled like this, and its eyes had the same amber gleam. No, sun and moon, no. She took a step back, muscles tensed for flight. But what was the point of running? She couldn't run from a force of nature. Eyes riveted on the shadow looming above her, she stammered out,
I do know what you are, or close enough. You're Draconicus, she swallowed. You're Chaos.
The shadow shifted, antlers and horns creaking and scraping against one another like branches in a stiff breeze.
Chaos? That ranks me too high, I'm feared. I know Chaos, and he and I are good old friends, but...
Liar.
Both the Bugle Nawes and Bonbon started. Aldrovandra had surfaced and was staring up at the cloaked Chimera, her upper lip curled up in a slight snarl. The Draconicus turned to her, the mist thickening around its body.
What falsehood have I told?
Aldrovandra's cowardice did not appear to have quite caught up with her indignation yet. She stepped forward, a glass-filled mane clinking.
That bit about us not being immortal. Eternity is our birthright, creature, and whatever the slip-brained, bell-addled shellycoat of a she who has hinted to you otherwise, I sincerely hope they blundered into a foundry or mistook a lump of bog iron for a turtle and only realized their mistake when they was halfway down their throat. It was a shellycoat, I suppose. Probably male. Spreading heresy outside the clan seems to be the sort of particularly idiotic thing a male would do. She sniffed. Testosterone poisoning, you know. No doubt he thought he was being impressive.
The Bugle Nawes considered this for a bit.
"'Tis unseemly, perhaps, for me to follow a question with another question, but perhaps you'll forgive me for it. I'm puzzled, you see. Whatever thou imaginest me to be is clearly very frightful to thee, lean inside. Yet thou, Foth, hast just told me off that I were a fool wee bairn, caught thoughtlessly toying with matters far more muckle than myself. It is vexing to me, this inconsistency. Please explain. What do you think I am?"
"Pain," thought Bonbon. "Loss, trickery, sadism, evil."
I have encountered a Draconicus before. He was called Discord. He broke out of some kind of stone prison less than a year ago, and he...
Her voice trailed off.
How could she possibly describe it?
She had been at Sugarcube Corner talking with Mr. Cake at the time. Demand had been increasing for her candy flowers and Automare Delight, and the Cakes had been interested in buying a larger weekly supply from her when he had come. The first warning had been a distant cascading series of cracks and booms, and when Bonbon dashed outside, she had seen the great airborne Pegasus city, Cloudsdale, collapsing in ruin while the long, lithe, chimerical form of Discord writhed down out of the sky towards Ponyville. She had been afraid, terrified, in fact. She could have borne that. For that one horrible day, though, before the Draconicus had been miraculously sealed away again, she thought that she had lost Lyra.
It wasn't that her mare friend was physically hurt, far from it, in fact. When Bon Bon had finally arrived back at their home, which was, at the time, upside down and floating 50 feet up in the air, Bon Bon had transformed into a Pegasus, figuring that she could always explain the wings as another manifestation of Discord's chaotic influence. She had found Lyra in their basement, methodically bashing the finger to pieces with a wrench. She had begged Lyra to come with her, escape, get away, but the spring-green unicorn had drawn back from her, a look of disgust on her face, and had hissed, "Ew, gay. Get away from me, filly fooler." Discord hadn't just appended reality, he had twisted and broken ponies' minds as well, ripping the world to pieces and dancing, laughing on the fragments. And now, here was another Draconicus. He might even be Discord, escaped from his prison and back for more sadistic fun. The demonic being had been a shapeshifter after all, but this seemed like an awfully long build-up for the punchline. Bon Bon had trouble believing the mad god from last summer would ever be this patient. She sighed and finished. Discord hurt a lot of ponies. He tortured the world.
"I was napping that week, so I didn't really notice," piped up Aldrovandra. "But the water in my bog tasted like rotting milk for months afterwards, so on reflection I have to concur with the changeling. Discord definitely lacked class."
The Boogle Naws was still for a long moment, considering. Then, gently and with not the faintest hint of magic, the shadows began to slide away from his body and back into their appropriate path while the mist fell away, drifting down in a spreading pool around the Draconicus. Aldrovandra hissed, sliding back under the water's surface, and Bon Bon took a few splashing steps back. The being that stood before them was similar to Discord in many ways, his body long and serpentine and patched together from a hodgepodge of different creatures, but it was also, quite clearly, immeasurably older than his wild relative. While Discord had only had 2 mismatched horns, the Boogle Naws had many, branching up from his heavyset head like an unruly thicket, and protruding in odd patches from his shaggy neck. His skin was a patchwork of many creatures' hides, mostly 4-legged, but there were a few odd patches from boneless beasts, soft and shimmering with shifting colors or jointed like a locust thorax. 3 wings arched above his back, 2 which appeared to be pieced together from the wings or membranes of many creatures— bats, birds, insects, flying squirrels, dragons, and the 3rd of which Bon Bon could have sworn was actually a whale's fin. His arms and legs were chimerical, his tail was a zoological kaleidoscope, and his head was a snaggle-toothed abomination, angular and bulging in all the wrong places. Only his eyes were not quite so terrible to look at. They were similar to Discord, certainly, but where the spirit of Chaos's eyes had flared madly, the Burgle Naws's were calm and quiet, like amber glowing with the warmth of ancient sunlight. The great creature spread his arms, mismatched claws open and palms turned towards the 2 she. "A frightful beast, am I know. I prefer to stay hidden. I am, I think, not quite so unnerving when veiled. But as ye say, ye had already seen another like me. Perhaps the shock of my own shape will be not so stoughton. The wild one is called Discord now. I kent him as Tarache, but from thy description he could not be any more but he." He sighed. "My poor nephew, t'ha been given so kindly a second chance, and then to ha' wasted it so."
"Your nephew?"
"In a manner of spicken. It is to say, we are kin o' a sort. I am senior, and he is Wiz Junior, and he is very far from being my son. So I nephew is perhaps the best word could be chosen, even if not quite accurate." Bon Bon paused a moment, thinking, before she responded. This creature seemed to be honestly benign, and even friendly. If he had powers anything like Discord's and could be persuaded to use them, the image of Chrysalis and the changelings being cast out, Equestria being saved, and Lyra returning to her safe and whole flickered through her mind. She couldn't waste this opportunity. "So, a little while ago you said you pitied the, Aishia, I think you called us. You aren't like Discord, then? You really wouldn't hurt us?"
"I hae nae wish tae."
Not quite as positive as she would have liked, but definitely not bad either. "Would you be willing, maybe, to help me, then?" The Boogle Naws inclined his head.
"How's that?"
"Well, if you have powers anything like Discord's, could you save my friend? Hey, you could stop the invasion. You could save every pony, even with a 1/10 of Discord's power."
"Would you?
I mean, I guess maybe you haven't always noticed when things have gone wrong in Equestria before, and maybe that's why you never helped in the past, but... She trailed off. No, it wasn't a real hope. A power on the scale of Discord's or Celestia's didn't just tuck itself away in the shadows if it could do so otherwise. The changeling raised her head to meet the Boogle Naws' gaze, and her shoulders slumped as she saw the pitying, almost apologetic look on his face.
"That's a no, then."
"Aye, 'tis. Thou hast miscast me, I'm afraid, wee leanin' side. I am no cruel, but my care is for anolder and deeper things than any brief mortal beastie. I will no so upset matters for such a slight cause."
Bon Bon shot a sidelong glance at Aldrovandra, who was simmering again at the mention of the word mortal.
The Boogle nods, who did not appear to have noticed, continues speaking. I will say, though, that could I help thee, I believe I would. I had nae especial fondness for poor Taharki's children, but unless I missed my mark, thou art a wee bit unusual, in the best of ways.
Children?
Bonbon winced as Aldevranda erupted from the greenish water, free ear flattened back against her head in rage and rock-filled tail lashing back and forth through the air like a cat of nine tails. She splashed forward, glaring furiously up at the hulking Draconicus.
Children? We are nothing's children, you glorified taxidermy experiment, and certainly not that pathetic newcomer Discords. Now, don't misunderstand me, I am very favorably impressed by your extraordinary sensitivity in telling my good my frenemy here that you wouldn't help her save her mislaid cara sposa, and then soothing her in her disappointment by explaining in insulting detail exactly why you wouldn't help her. Class act there, really. I'd like to take my hat off to you if my hat wasn't a strange bit of door-related pony gimmer and temporarily stuck fast to my head. But your impeccable manners notwithstanding, the mere insinuation that not only might the eternal she have an end, but that our kind might have had a beginning, is such a vile suggestion.
You do look kind of like a shellycoat, Aldevranda, said Bonbon desperately. She had to distract the wretched creature and stop her from insulting the Boogle Gnaws. Please, Celestia, oh please, oh please, oh please, let her stop. Even if he wasn't disposed to help her, she did not need a creature as powerful as Discord getting angry with them. That could end very, very badly. Aldevranda made a noise like a toad that had been stepped on and whipped around to face Bonbon. The changeling shrugged. I'm just saying. The Kelpie made even more squished toad noises, then spluttered.
Are you actually suggesting that? Even you must. Surely you have some limits. We are the she.
To Bonbon's desperate relief, the Boogle Gnaws did not appear to have begun smiting either of them. Good. She liked non-smiting gods. Now she could just keep him that way.
I know, Aldevranda, we are the she, but maybe the she aren't what we thought we were. Look at yourself. You do look a lot like a shellycoat now. There's hardly a patch of your coat that doesn't have something glued to it.
And what about the changelings? We have our imposters, ponies who occasionally try to sneak into the hives and claim that they're changelings who've lost the ability to transform.
What if they're telling the truth? And then there are the pukas, and their grimalkins, and the redmanes, and their... Stop! Just stop! I'm immortal! I'm immortal! I am not going to die!
The Kelpie's hooves were shaking, sending little ripples spreading in rings around her, although Bonbon couldn't tell whether it was from fear or anger.
It can't be so. It just can't. It's not right. This is just heresy, you heretical heresy-saying heretic. I've held back, you know. Never really told you what I thought of you. Just you wait, though. Just you wait. You think I'm snarky now? You think I'm insulting? Oh, you'll see. Oh, you'll see.
She stared iron daggers at Bonbon, panting heavily. Bonbon returned the favor. The Boogle Gnaws, who had been watching this exchange with an air of polite detachment, remarked, "A gaped mouth often catches a closed fist." The Kelpie whipped her head around, glaring back up at him.
Oh, are we playing insults from the pre-classical era now? How charming. Let me try. Thy mother is a donkey and thy father was redolent of...
Bonbon splashed forward, cutting her off. Enough was enough.
Aldevranda, a god just told you to shut up. Further sass is probably not a good idea. But Mindax, he said... You said... Ah...
Bonbon could almost hear the sound of several tons of latent cowardice smashing into the Kelpie's indignation. It sounded like... Splat, or possibly squish. Aldevranda stepped back from the Draconicus, the snarl slowly disappearing from her face and her eyes widening.
Right. Good point, actually.
She shot a venomous glance at Bonbon, hissed, "We're not finished, though," and sank under the water's surface. Neither Bonbon nor the Boogle Gnaws said anything for some moments. Gnats hummed around them, a cowbird called somewhere in the distance, and Bonbon felt what she was reasonably sure was another leech attaching itself to her left hind fetlock. Finally, she chanced a glance up at the Boogle Gnaws. He was gazing down at her, warm eyes half-lidded, as he stroked his goat-like beard with a chimerical claw. At length he spoke.
"I am sorry for thee, so very sorry. Indeed for all ye. Taharki did indeed make the ice seed during his first mad attempt to take the cosmos for his ain, as a thoughtless joke. Ye were, I'm afraid, nothing more than that. He made you so that he could laugh at ye. He found it funny to make the most common metal in the world utterly poisonous to ye, and to give ye reason to be fair to randomly chosen plants, craters, and objects. A broad joke!"
The Boogle Gnaws' voice was uncharacteristically bitter.
"My poor stupid nephew. He thought that, merely because he could warp reality as he chose, he wouldn't fight back. Reality, we lean inside, don't like being warped."
The Draconicus rose ponderously up from his lounging position, swamp water cascading from his shaggy flanks and duckweed clinging to his scales. He uncoiled his serpentine neck and lifted his head towards the swamp canopy, gazing up at the bulk of the canterhorn through the whispered leaves, and then he looked down at Bonbon once more.
"Aye, it resented all that my nephew did. 'Tis for that reason it loathes the eyes' side. To it they are a horror and an abomination, and as long as they exist, reality will strive to blot them out of being. They kent their danger once upon a time. That which unseely means, thou kenst, unlucky. The seely court ne'er attempted to hide, and it withered away within a few hundred years. With the unseely court has only survived by hoarding fragments of lost time, piecing them together to make their sheltered realm of Tir na n'og, and venturing out from it only rarely." His strange face creased in a smile. "Although I ken that thou art something of an exception to the rule. Come, Mindax, I believe thy friend said."
"I prefer Bonbon, actually." The Draconicus nodded.
"Bonbon it is. Come then, Bonbon, and I will help thee on what fashion I may."
He raised an immense hoof, claw, paw, and stepped forward. Bonbon hesitated a moment, then waited after him. Behind her, she heard the splashing sound of Aldrovandra, slithering just beneath the water's surface after them. She ignored it. Once Bonbon had drawn level with him, the Bugle-Naws continued.
"I hae o'er my nephew's powers, aye. But I, unlike him, I chosen to make a friend o' existence. I use my strength no to wrap myself in unreality, but to diminish it, forcing it away from my sail and squelching it."
He extended an arm tipped with an appendage that was half crab claw and half tentacle, and pushed aside a log blocking Bonbon's path.
"That surprised the cosmos. It expected me to drag it to and fro and force it to do my bidden, and when I didn't, I think it became rather fond of me. It is kind to me in strange, unthinking, emotional way, thou kenst. I didn't like to be seen by mortals, and they tend to be afeard for my appearance. And so, when I come within sight of them, the cosmos itself veils me from their gain. I didn't will the mist and shadows into being, wee Bonbon. But the first we met, I merely preferred not to be seen, and the cosmos honored my preference."
Bonbon raised an eyebrow. "Honestly, I think you are a bit more frightening as an unidentifiable reality-warping shadow monster."
"Well, I didn't say that reality quite understands mortal minds. It only understood as much as it is capable of understanding anything. Then I wished not to be seen."
He reared up on his hind legs, squinting at the canterhorn to get his bearings, then dropped down to all fours and continued walking.
"I grew fond of the cosmos in turn, great whirling glory that it is. And much as I pity thee, well..."
The Bugle-Naws paused, choosing his words.
"This pony that thou seekst to rescue, there atop the mountain. Thou art fond of her, aye? Well, I suppose that a stranger marched up to thee and begged thy help, for he was in great distress. Of course, I tells them, I shall help you in any way I can. Well then, he says, pointing to thy friend, to help me thou must make a great stick and soundly beat the pony with it. Only then will I be happy. Thou wouldst nae do it. And just so, I will no twist reality's arm to save thee, a new acquaintance who will so much dust in the wind a mere century from now. I couldn't be so callous. I love and respect the cosmos too muckle."
Bonbon digested this. "You wouldn't intervene even to save the happiness of thousands of ponies? This invasion won't be a clean business. Queen Chrysalis is cruel, and she already snuck her way into the confidence of Celestia and Luna." She paused. "They're the two alicorns who control the sun and..." The Bugle-Naws raised a great paw, chuckling.
"Nay, dinna describe them to me. I remember them weel, my great nieces. Clever, bonny lasses, the both of them."
His smile faded.
"I wish them weel, but no, even for them, I winna intervene. Nor would I need to. They have power o'er their ain. Me we changing, and it's kin to mine. If they wished, either of them could dare Tarake did and more. But they're both canny to their risk, as my nephew Wedzina. Celestia especially, it has been many an age since I last met her. But she still reigns despite exerting her power on the sun itself, earning the cosmos ill favor morn and night for thousands of years. Well, we had different views on many points, and I need not be respect for her. A canny ident lass she is, always ettling some scheme or t'other. Only half an hour work out, but then all she needs is for one to work."
He came to a halt, sending a small wave surging forward into the tree-shadowed gloom, and after gingerly waving a chimerical claw through the space in front of him and sniffing once or twice, he smiled.
"But I indulge myself in recollections which are not, nay doubt, a little interest to thee. Enough of that. See, we have arrived."
Bonbon glanced around. The patch of water they were standing in didn't seem terribly remarkable, aside from being perhaps a bit colder than the flooded forest through which they had just walked. She looked up at the Bugle-Naws.
I don't quite understand."
"Do they know? But of course I'm forgetting. Thou art a wee small beastie, and didn't cover quite so much ground as mysel. Step forward a few paces, and thou shouldst see, in a manner of speaking."
Bonbon waded forward through the water, ripples spreading out before her, and tiny frogs leaping into the water as she drew near to them. Nothing else seemed to happen. She turned and looked back at the Bugle-Naws, but he merely motioned her forward, so after a moment of hesitancy, she took another step. The light dimmed and faded away to blackness. The green moldering taste in the air vanished, and tree frogs and woodpeckers fell into silence. In the fraction of a second before they were completely blotted out of sight, the tree trunks morphed into crystalline columns and mounds of rubble. And her hoof came down with a light clinking on a smooth stone surface, empty of the smell of life and slightly damp to the touch. She inhaled sharply and, very slowly, lifted her hoof up and took a step back. There was a flood of light, and the swamp surged back into being. She splashed a few more paces back, just for good measure, and looked up at the Bugle Nawz, who was regarding her with an amused look on his face. "I believe I would have preferred," Bon Bon said, her voice a controlled monotone, "to have been warned about that before Hoof. What was that?" The tatterdemalion beast chuckled. "Forgive me, I was curious to see how thou wast to react. If I may say so, thou showedst great sense and composure." "Thanks. Again, though, what the hay was that?" "A convenience, shall we say. A slight fold in its space, so that the solid rock of my menhir and the waters of my swamp intersect without intersecting, and bring us quickly and easily into decays beneath my great niece's city. I didna spend my time amongst the trees and waters here, thou canst, though I loved them dearly. Every few centuries I feel the urge to wander, and these sorts of folds allow me to do so easily. It is a great kindness of the cosmos, I have always felt, and it grants me these shortcuts. And while it may not approve of your kind, it evidently will nae bar thee from using one of my paths. Just this once. Thy friend is in danger from a clan of the lean inside, if she know. I seem to recall that the clan favored Obliettes as a mean of vengeance, and if that is still so, well, thou wilt find her beneath the earth, not on its surface." Bon Bon had waded up to the boundary again and was now stepping back and forward across the boundary, trying to find the precise point at which the cave merged with the swamp. Without looking at the Bugle Nawz, she muttered, "Yes, that's true enough." She stepped back from the threshold, but there is a chance she might still be in Canterlot. Not much of one, but a chance, and I don't want to risk guessing wrong. "Aldervandra!" A matted mane and two squinting eyes popped up from the water's surface. "It is a lie. It can't be true. I will live forever. What do you want?" Bon Bon waded over to Aldervandra and drew a poker with a length of rope out of her saddlebag attached to her back. "I'm promoting you from Pack Kelpie to Messenger Kelpie. I'm going into the caves under the Canterhorn to try to find Lyra, and I want you to go to Canterlot. There, you are to find Princess Luna. She is a dark blue alicorn, wears black regalia, and her mane is like the night sky." "How poetic," sneered the Kelpie. "No, it literally looks exactly like the night sky. You'll see what I mean when you find her. Anyway, find her and tell her that the spirit that possessed Twinkleshine—" "Yes, I know, Twinkleshine is a very funny name, moving on— is in the caverns underneath Canterlot, trying to find a pale green unicorn mare named Lyra, and that she sent you. Tell her, also, that the pink alicorn with the crystal heart cutie mark— oh, for Celestia's sake, I didn't come up with the term cutie mark, stop snickering— is the queen of the changelings chrysalis, and that she is not to be trusted. Finally, beg her to, A, get Lyra to safety if she's still in the city, and B, to please send some pony to rescue me, and possibly Lyra from out of the caverns. And whatever you do, Aldervandra, do not talk to the pink alicorn with the cutie mark shaped like a crystal heart again. She is Queen Chrysalis. Do you understand all that?" The Kelpie was silent for a moment, considering, and then said haltingly, "Yes, yes, I can do that." More confidently, she added, "I can most certainly do that. Yes, indeed. Count on me, Mindex." She glanced up to the Bugle Nawz. "I realize yours is a busy life. Horrific slander against entire races won't commit itself, after all. But do you think you might spare me a moment to show me the way out of this, unique little place of yours?"
The Bugle Nawz stared down at Bon Bon, who nodded, and then said, "Go back 40 paces, close thy een for 40 heartbeats, and when thou openest thy een again, thou wilt find thyself at the foot of my menhir. Thou wilt have to guide thyself from there."
Aldervandra bent herself down on an elaborate bow. "You have my undying gratitude. Note the emphasis." She raised herself up, and with an insincere smile plastered across her face, turned to Bon Bon. "Well, I'd best be off, hadn't I? This has been fun. See ya." She dropped back below the water's surface and slithered off the way they had come. The Bugle Nawz watched her go, and once she was out of sight, turned to Bon Bon. "I didn't think that was wise, we lead inside. That one has treachery running through her veins." Bon Bon wrapped a length of rope tightly around the exposed iron of the poker, bound it in place with a somewhat messily tied knot, and slung the whole arrangement over her back. "That's what I'm counting on. She'll go straight to Chrysalis, of course, and tell her everything. If Lyra is still in the city, Chrysalis will banish her to the caves upon learning that she's connected with me, a grand traitor who deserves the harshest punishment. And if Lyra isn't in the city, then Chrysalis will feel cheated by the fact that not only have I escaped punishment, but I'm trying to save her, and she'll drag us both up to the surface for something harsher than merely being forgotten. Escaping from the ladder will be hard, but at least we'll be out of the caves, and with Lyra by my side, well, we'll manage something.
Either way, she said, giving one final tug on the rope binding the poker to her back and satisfying herself that it wouldn't slip off, I win. Or, at least, I lose slightly less than I was losing before Hoof.
Thou placed a risky game.
At this point, I have to. She turned towards the cave entrance and drew on her last dwindling reserves of strength. There was a green glimmer around her forehead that flickered, faded, then burst out in a tiny explosion of chartreuse flame, leaving a unicorn's horn sprouting from her brow. Bonbon stumbled, nearly fell, then wearily brought herself back to her hooves again. Sun and Moon, that had taken more out of her than she had expected. It was a good thing she hadn't tried to transform into a Pegasus to fly to Canterlot. Growing the necessary musculature would have been far more draining than creating a simple horn, and she never would have made it. The changeling turned her head back to the Bugle Nas and said, I won't pretend that I don't wish you would do more to help, but I can't blame you, I guess. And what you have done has been incredibly helpful.
Thank you very much.
The great beast bowed. Go, thy friend needs thee. Bonbon turned back to face the invisible threshold between the swamp and the cave, took a deep breath, sent a faint glimmer of light shining out from her horn, and stepped forward into the darkness.